Welcome to The Point. I'm Amy Vince, sitting in for Mindy Todd. Later in the hour, Mindy talks with Jeremy McQueen, founder and choreographer for the Black Iris Project. It's a ballet collaborative creating new work, celebrating diversity and Black history. The collaborative has been in residency on the Vineyard and will be performing a new work on September 1st as part of the Vineyard Arts Project. But first, we take a look at the films on the schedule for this year's Martha's Vineyard International Film Festival, which runs from September 4th through the 9th. Joining us once again is festival founder and executive director of the Martha's Vineyard Film Society, Richard Paradise. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. Good morning, Amy.
Great to see you
again. Fabulous to be here in Woods Hole on a beautiful morning.
It is the 13th year of the festival, and I was thinking back to a time before the Film Society was in existence and you had done the schedule. Was it hard, or the festival, was it hard to get access to international films on the Vineyard? What was it like?
Oh, yes. Well, for one thing, just the formats of how and what you could present the films in was very limiting 13 years ago. Basically, it was 35 millimeter film, so you had to have a fully established cinema. And luckily, there are cinemas on the island that we were able to rent for the festival in those first few years. Or you would have to play a beta tape. Remember beta tapes or digi beta tapes? And you'd have to have these huge beta tape machines that weighed about 60 pounds. And I used to have to rent them in Boston and drive them back to the island to actually play these beta tapes, which were not much better than playing a DVD. So you can imagine the quality of these screenings in these pop-up venues where I used to show the festival. But of course, that's all changed, you know, in the last 5 or 6 years with the occurrence of DCP, digital formatted projection, and the building of the Martha's Vineyard Film Center. We now have, you know, fabulous venues for screening our films that have, you know, superior sound and picture quality. But yes, it was very difficult getting international films because we'd actually have to get 35 millimeter film, which is very expensive to ship and was very difficult in the early days.
It's funny, in my mind, I associate from decades ago international films to be kind of that scratchy, not very good visual, which I realize now is not because it was poor quality of what they shot. It was just what we were viewing it on.
Yes, right. The film stock would get beaten up as it traveled from festival to festival or venue to venue. And just even with commercial films, if you were in kind of at the end of the line, so to speak, in terms of the theatrical run, you'd be getting a film stock that was sort of roughed up a bit. And so it showed on the screen, though. There are purists who love that. Love the scratchiness and sort of the depth of field of true 35 millimeter.
I guess it's kind of similar to listening to music on an LP now, right?
Exactly.
That's making that comeback.
Exactly.
So when do you start searching for films for the festival, and what are some of the criteria you're looking for?
Well, I'm really searching for films that bring to the island, to our audiences, some sort of cultural understanding of another place, another culture in the world. The International Film Festival has always been about world cinema, showing films from around the world. And of course, from year to year, it changes. You know, certain themes, certain geographical focuses change. But the process is always ongoing. Because I program 3 movie theaters and probably show over 200 films a year, I'm constantly coming into contact with film, you know, opportunities, films that I might screen either in a theatrical run or just in a film festival. But in earnest, I usually start after the first of the year. I go to the Sundance Film Festival every year, which is in January. And so that kind of kicks off my sort of process of looking for world cinema for the festival in September. And sometimes it takes 9 months before that film that I might have seen early in the year at a film festival, it takes 9 months before it works its way through its distribution strategy, whether it's acquired by a U.S. distributor or whether it's still being represented by a sales agent or an international sales agent. So in January, going to Sundance, you see a variety of films. Then I usually follow that up with a festival in Latin America. I also go to the Tribeca Film Festival. I would say every third year I go to the Berlin Film Festival in Germany. So all these festivals give me an opportunity to see the newest films that are being premiered on a global basis. And then it just takes some time, and not always am I able to program a film in our festival in September that I might have seen back in March.
And have there been films where you've thought, oh, I would really like to include this, but you can't get access just because of the distribution? Does that happen?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And not to get too much into the weeds, but a big hindrance in some cases has been the advent of Netflix becoming a buyer of films at film festivals, because Netflix, just by their nature, wants their films that they acquire to be seen on their streaming platform. There's not really any motivation on their part to have it in a festival. Now, I have been successful in working with Netflix on occasion to get a film that before it goes on their platform, before it has its release on Netflix, I've been able to play either in our theater or at a festival. But once it's on their platform, there's like very little incentive for them to have it seen at a festival or in a theater for that matter. And that's not what they're about. But generally, it's a combination of things. You could be dealing with a film that has been in a number of film festivals and now is waiting strategically to have its rights acquired, and it doesn't really want any more exposure, especially in a market that they're trying to sell the rights to, in the case of the United States. So they've really taken it off the market, off the shelf. But, you know, it happens maybe three or four films that are wanted to see, but there's always so many more,
right.
There's so many films. Who knows how many films are created each year globally? Tens of thousands,
right.
Are, you know, and of course you have to curate that down to the ones that meet certain criteria. You mentioned criteria in the sense of what I think our audiences would find endearing, would find enlightening, would find entertaining. And that's just comes from years and years of programming the festival and knowing my audience. And, you know, most of the time I get it right, I think, you know, and you can judge that a number of ways. You know, occasionally I'll show a film and it just didn't work for people.
Right.
But, you know, festivals are, I always tell people, festivals are those opportunities to be a little more exploratory.
Right.
To explore some fringe material, to open yourself to something that maybe is not mainstream in presentation or genre or whatever. But.
Right. So let's start talking about some of the films. You always
yes.
try to do an opening. Your opening night is
yes.
usually some. So tell us what
well,
you have on tap.
Well, this year, I've been telling people, you know, I've been using the little catchphrase, let's fiesta. And obviously fiesta means festival or festivities. And it's Spanish. And there's a reason for that, because a third of this year's program are films from Latin America.
Mm-hmm.
And our opening film on Thursday, when we have our big opening night reception with our big tented affair on the water there at the Tisbury Marketplace, is a film called Feliz Año Tijuana, Happy New Year Tijuana. And so it takes place in Mexico. It's the border city of Tijuana, which is bordering Southern California. And it deals with a professor of Chicano studies who's been in the United States for 25, 30 years. He's from Mexico originally, and he's going back home. He's going back to Mexico. He's sort of frustrated sort of where he is in life, and he's decided to move back to Mexico, to Guanajuato, which is a state and a city in Mexico. But he gets meleeed in Tijuana. He's flying from Tijuana to his home state, and his plane, he misses his plane. So he has to spend New Year's Eve in Tijuana. And so it's like a 24-hour period in his life in Tijuana on the border. with a wall. There's the border wall factors in. And that's another theme of this festival. Many of the films in the festival deal with both real and emotional walls and borders that we create for ourselves or what we are faced with in life. So many of the films deal with some sort of border, crossing a border, trying to get across a border in the case of a refugee. So there are films that deal with that, like The Charmer, for instance, is a film that is both takes place in Denmark and also Iran. It's about an Iranian refugee who's in Denmark, who desperately wants to stay in Denmark. And his only way that he can think of doing that is to get married to a Danish woman in one of these paper, paper marriages. And so he's a charming, handsome Iranian. And so he goes through a series of, dates and relationships trying to find someone who will marry him. But then, of course, what gets thrown into the storyline is he falls in love with someone. and so his whole plan goes out the window. So a lot of the films, deal with this sort of both emotional barriers and borders and also, real borders and barriers.
Yeah, I'm also thinking there's some, and because you're talking about this whole notion of being an immigrant or there's a film, I'm not going to remember the name of it, of a young Pakistani girl who's living, is it in Sweden or Norway?
Yes.
And that's another one. It's sort of that cultural... she's living as an immigrant and sort of trying to find her way.
Right.
And
it's almost reverse. She was born and raised in, I believe, Norway. And the movie itself is called What People Will Say. That's the English title. I can't say the Norwegian title. I'm sorry. But What People Will Say. She's a 16-year-old Norwegian teenager who grew up, in Norway and... But her parents are Pakistani. They expect certain things of her as a young woman. And she sort of is your typical, I don't want to say Scandinavian teen, but, she has a boyfriend and she gets caught. Sort of he's in her bedroom. And I don't want to say much about that. But her father gets irate about her her morals. And basically decides to ship her to Pakistan to live with his brother and sister-in-law. And she has to be sort of thrown into this culture that she knows nothing about. I mean, she's Pakistani heritage, but she grew up in Norway.
Right.
And so she's thrown into Pakistan with its very strict, moral code and, religious code. And so she has to deal with all this. And so she's an immigrant in her own birth country, so to speak.
And it's also that universal struggle of a parent trying who loves their child desperately, but also wants to do what's best. And it's that you feel that angst from the parents.
Yeah, her parents are very loving, and it's not like she's abused in any way or it's not a horror story, but she's going through this acclimation to a different culture that she knows nothing about, except that she is Pakistani. And looks Pakistani.
Looks Pakistani, but doesn't necessarily feel it.
Yeah. And then there's, there's this film called Struggling Hendrix, which is sort of a light drama, comic elements about a dog who goes across the border in Cyprus because there's a Turkish side and there's a Greek side in Cyprus. And the owner of the dog has to retrieve the dog. Because it's run across the border, which is illegal, by the way. People can go across the border, but not animals in Cyprus. So it becomes kind of a joke, him trying to find Hendrix, the dog.
The dog. Yeah.
So I don't plan it, but somehow there's always some sort of theme that arises,
emerges
out of the films each year. And this seems to be the one that's emerged.
We're talking about films at this year's Martha's Vineyard International Film Festival. If you have a question or a comment, you can join the conversation at 866-999-4626 or send an email to thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll have more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're discussing films at the Martha's Vineyard International Film Festival with festival founder and executive director of the Martha's Vineyard Film Society, Richard Paradise. I want to move into comedy.
Oh, yes.
Yes, you have some comedy. And I'm just curious, do you find that comedy is universal across cultures, or are there certain bits of comedy that might not find?
Well, I think comedy is probably the hardest thing to transcribe between cultures, translate through cultures. I think a film that can do that successfully is a winner. I mean, will be a winner in terms of festivals and maybe securing distribution throughout the world. You know, comedy is sometimes subjective. Well, most times is very subjective, and there's nuances. In this festival, we have a number of films that I wouldn't say are pure comedies. That's the other thing. Most world cinema, when you say comedy, it's not the same as what we know as a American comedy. You know, usually it's comic elements within a dramatic story. And you still have that story that's propelling the characters, and the comedy comes from the situations.
Which is almost more real life.
Exactly.
Nobody lives a life of...
Exactly, that we can relate to. Yeah, no one lives a life of constant one-liners and pratfalls and things like that. Whereas I really appreciate and really enjoy more so cinema, world cinema, that has comic elements to it. And you find the comedy in sort of universal, you know, issues and themes and concerns. So we have a lot of films this year that have comic elements to them. One that I thought was a real hoot when I saw it at the Tribeca Film Festival is called The St. Bernard Syndicate. And it's a Danish film. And it primarily pertains to an individual who's been a failure at all sorts of business dealings, and his father's sort of a wealthy gentleman who's funded all these schemes, and finally his father said, no more, you know, I'm not giving you any more money, because he's come up with this new idea. His new idea is to breed St. Bernards, which are these beautiful large dogs that are synonymous with the Alps in Europe, and breed them in China and sell the puppies in China to well-to-do Chinese families. So he's come up with this idea, but he needs seed money, capital money. So he stumbles across an old classmate, an old school friend. Well, actually, I wouldn't even call them friends. He was actually bullied by this gentleman. But he convinces him that he should come in business with him. And unknowing to the entrepreneur, his friend is suffering, you know, from an illness, and he's just inherited a little bit of money, but his friend, the entrepreneur, thinks, you know, he's inherited a lot of money, so he thinks he's a great person to grab hold of. So they go off together to China to try to convince some Chinese investors that they should also come into this plan. And the entrepreneur actually kind of swipes his father's St. Bernard dog. I guess this is where he gets the idea from, and takes him along to China with him. So you can imagine all sorts of funny cultural, you know, comedy comes from the situations mm-hmm. that they get themselves in. And it's by a director that has had some international success with previous films. This is his first narrative film. He's done more sort of documentaries, but sort of mock documentaries and documentaries that look at the comic undertones of society. His name is Mads, M-A-D-S, Bruegelah. And he did a film about North Korea a few years ago that I played at at the film festival. So this is his newest film, and he scripted it, but it's a hoot. So that's just a good example. Our closing night film is an Italian film that is shot in black and white, and is sort of a dark comedy. And it deals with a gentleman who wakes up one morning with a ringing in his ear, sort of like tinnitus. And all through the day, he's got this ringing in his ear, and he's dealing with all these people and situations that become comic foils to the fact that he's having problems with his hearing. He's trying to find out, you know, resolve that problem. So in that sense, that's more of a pure comedy. Most of the films have some kind of comic balance with the dramatic aspects of the film.
Side of it. I'm wondering, when you're looking at potential films, do you read or talk with film critics from those countries to see what they're saying about the film? Because it's interesting to me that as an American, how we view a film from another country might be very different than how people in that country.
Right. Well, not really. I don't really look at critics reporting on a film because I try to watch the film myself. I try to judge from watching the film whether I think it will resonate with our audiences and will be appealing, you know, to our audiences. Of course, you know, at the end of the day, I can't be a purist. I mean, I still have to be a business person. I've got to make sure that people want to see these films, that they buy tickets to see these films, and that they get something from these films. So, you know, I use my judgment and not necessarily, I mean, there are reviews that I might read, or what's more important is what other festivals have these films played at, have they stood out from the crowd? So most of these films have been in multiple international film festivals where they've won awards, audience award, you know, jury critics award. So they stand out, or the actor or actress in the film won an award. So, you know, they have a pedigree.
Right.
We're not a festival, nor do I really ever want to be a festival where we get hundreds and hundreds of submissions of new films.
And you're sort of culling through them.
Yes,
at that point,
and trying to, you know, pick 20, 30 films from thousands. We're not that type of festival. Mm-hmm. We don't have the staff, for that matter. I mean, there are wonderful festivals like Sundance and Cannes and Venice Film Festival, which is going on right now in Italy, Tribeca, Toronto. These festivals are the ones that get thousands and thousands of submissions. So through their sort of narrowing and focusing down, you know, to the best of around the world, that I use that as my sort of starting off point.
Yeah, you're the curator of a
Yeah. But there are occasions when I'm surprised when someone will unsolicited contact me and say, I'd like to submit my film. And I say, sure, go ahead.
Yeah,
that would be fantastic.
Right. Well, in the few minutes we have left, what other films that we haven't talked about are you particularly excited about?
Well, you know, as I mentioned, we have a heavy emphasis in Latin films this year. So all these films I saw at other festivals, whether it was Sundance or the festival in Latin America. And I think the first three films, you know, starting with Tuesday night, because we do what I call a festival warm-up. We have one film on Tuesday night and then one film on Wednesday night. They're part of the festival. Both of those are phenomenal and excellent examples of Latin films. You know, in terms of films that I'm looking forward to sharing with people, I would say that we've got some really good Israeli films this year that I think people will quite appreciate. Also, there's a film that sort of came late to the festival. It's one of the few documentaries that I'm showing, and it's called Tea with the Dams. Dams in terms of Maggie Smith, Judi Dench, and it's four of these iconic women, British women actresses who get together in real life, get together for tea in the country on a regular basis. And someone came up with the brilliant idea to film one of their teas. And so I think this will be a big hit with our audiences, you know, especially with people who grew up watching these fine actresses in all sorts of movies over the years. Joan Plowright is the other, one of the other actresses. So that's what I'm pretty excited about sharing with my audience.
Oh, and briefly, because we haven't talked about, you have two nights of shorts films too, right?
Yes. Oh, and the shorts are always very important. We invite back for the 12th out of 12 out of 13 years, Bill Plimpton, who's sort of the godfather of independent animation. He's a New York-based animator. He's been twice nominated for an Academy Award for animated shorts. He's done like six or seven animated features. He's back. It's actually the only program I don't curate in the entire festival. I leave it to him. Mm-hmm. He chooses the best 10, 15 animated shorts that he's seen in the last 12 months, and he brings that curated program to the festival. He comes himself. He's always a pleasure to have, Bill Plimpton. The other short program, of course, is our international juried short program, and that we're very proud of. You know, for the last 7 or 8 years, we've been soliciting short films from around the world. We usually get 300 to 400 submissions. And from our previewing committee, we narrow that down to 10, in this case, 11 short finalists. And we do that program on Saturday night at 6:30 at the Capawalk Theater. And then we have a separate jury. And our very good friend, Tim Miller, who couldn't join us this morning, he's part of the jury. A number of other people are part of the jury. And they pick the best film from those finalists. And it's announced at the film festival. And those films come from a variety of different countries. I think there's 5 or 6 countries represented in the 11 shorts this year.
And that's one. Film festivals are one of the few places that people can see shorts.
Oh, yes.
Right? I mean, it's just...
Yeah, other than online, of course. But in theaters, yes, it's one of the few places that you can see an enormous amount of short films in a very short period of time. And in other festivals that I go to, shorts are probably even more predominant. There might be 40 or 50 or 60 short films. In our case, we limit it to about 25 short films. But it's always a sold-out performance. We always get a lot of the filmmakers, the short filmmakers, to come and join us here on the Vineyard. And this year is no exception. I think we have 4 or 5 of the 11 filmmakers that will be joining us.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
And then also we have other filmmakers joining us via Skype, which is a great technology that people have become, you know, pretty used to these days. And we use it in our theater to have filmmakers join us.
Part of the discussion. Well, the Martha's Vineyard International Film Festival runs September 4th through the 9th. We will have a link with a list of the films and the screening times at our website, capeandislands.org. Richard Paradise, founder and executive director of the Martha's Vineyard Film Society. Thanks again for coming.
Thank you, Amy. It's always a pleasure to be at WCII and to be on this program, The Point.
Just ahead, Mindy Todd talks with the founder and choreographer of the Black Iris Project. We will have that after a quick break.